Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We are so glad you are with us today. We got a really cool show, and we're going to be talking about with Allison. What are we talking about today, Allison?
We are talking about the intersections between Vedic philosophy, Jyotisha, or Vedic astrology, and mental health.
Wow, that's a mouthful. And you're going to explain to those who are listening, maybe not from Fairfield, who don't know what all this means. So you are listening to Mental Health Matters on KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. The shows are archived at KRUUFM.com. But if they're not there, we're going to have most of the shows also re-archived through the Arden Counseling Center's website, which is ardencenter.com. So not to confuse you, so www.ardencenter.com, and look under media there, and you'll see the shows archived there. Also on our YouTube channel, they're also archived there with a bunch of lectures dealing with mental health issues. So really cool, and we're really glad you're with us today. And today we got a fantastic guest, Allison. Full disclosure, I actually saw Allison for a Jyotish reading, which I'll explain what Jyotish is in a second, and had an incredible experience and really insightful. And so I am just so thrilled that Allison could join us today to go over what Jyotish is from her perspective and what it really can mean for us, what we can do with that, how it relates to mental health. So hi, Allison. So glad you're with us.
I'm very glad to be here, Terry.
So tell us about what Jyotish is for those who don't know and how you think about those topics.
All right. Jyotish, or Jyotisha as it is more properly called in Sanskrit, is a combination of two Sanskrit words, Jyoti, which means light, and Isha, which means Lord or God, but God in the sense of the laws of nature, the way things operate. So Jyotisha is often referred to as Vedic astrology or Indian astrology in this country. It is the world's oldest continuously practiced divinatory system because it has an oral tradition that goes back to as far as the Vedas. And it is it originated with the Vedas as an effort to simply understand the cosmos and how we can most beneficially participate in the types of larger cosmic energies of which we are a fractal part. It evolved over time to include systems of divining things for individual destinies. So that's mostly what many people use it for today. It is still used to notice and take advantage of auspicious times, to participate in rituals, do different activities. But it is most often in this country used as a lens to view one's personal destiny. And destiny, we could say, is composed of a couple of different elements. It's composed of karma, which is the objective circumstances in which an individual being finds themselves. Mm. And by objective, I mean not just your socioeconomic status, the religion you were raised in, the type of family you came from, the type of spouse you have, but also your physical health, the nature of your body, etc. And samskara, which are your mental impressions. Samskaras are mental impressions. From the Indian perspective, children are not born as blank slates. They're born already with multiple impressions that come from many sources. Some come from past life memories. Some come from the memory of the personal DNA, because as you will probably know if you have looked into epigenetics, DNA carries the memory of the ancestors. Indians have always known that. That's been proven by modern science as well. So people come as a sort of package of influences, the climate they grow up in, the people they associate with, their DNA, their past life memories, etc. And then layered onto that will be their experiences in a particular individual incarnation, all of which will come to represent an individual reality. So Jyotisha attempts both to describe that reality to the individual in question and to make their expectations about it realistically hopeful, we could say, because as they say, success is getting what you want, but happiness is wanting what you have.
Ooh, I love that phrase. Say that one again.
Success is getting what you want, and happiness is wanting what you have already.
All right. I like that. All right. So for somebody who doesn't, let me be the doubting Tom here.
Oh, please do.
Okay. So what's different between this and Western astrology, and why should anyone care?
Okay.
I know that seems like a strange question, especially in Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we are recording in Fairfield, Iowa, for those of you somewhere around the world who are listening. And this is a wonderful meditating community. And there's a lot of people there who don't meditate or do other things. And some of this stuff could just be cosmic jibberjash. Mm-hmm. Why should anyone care about this?
Well, perhaps not everyone should,
okay.
And certainly not everyone does. That, again, will be a matter of individual mental impression, whether or not people care. Now, to answer the first part of the question, there are many differences between Vedic astrology and Western astrology. That is not to say that Western astrology can't be a very valuable tool in its own right, particularly for Westerners, because it has obviously a more Western sort of implicitly embedded philosophy. Now, Western astrology has several differences. One is that due to the Christian overtake of Europe, a lot of sort of sacred lore went down the tubes in Europe. And so Western astrology, as the system it is today, was only sort of recognized, rediscovered, reinvented, a few hundred years ago. That has advantages and disadvantages, number one. Number two, most Western astrologers use something we could refer to as a different astronomy that's a little bit complicated to explain. So it doesn't have either the same sort of philosophical spiritual principles that Vedic astrology has, nor does it have the same sort of long 10,000-year history. So Vedic astrology has an immense body of techniques. One of the huge differences is because, God is everything in one sense. So I always say any divinatory system can work in the right hands, in the hands of the right practitioner. In, the Santeria throw bones, some people kill chickens and look at the spray of blood, the Turkish reed tea leaves. There are many different ways of trying to get a broader, more objective understanding of one's position in the cosmos. It tends to be something that humans want to do because we want, we are the only beings who seek self-understanding. So
you're saying, though, I like how you're saying it really is about in the hands of the practitioner. If you have somebody who's, let's say, able to tune in in a higher level, it matters more. So if you're reading tea leaves or tarot cards, for most people who pick up a deck of tarot cards and shuffle them around or the I Ching or whatever it is, it's mostly crap. It's mostly fun little game, but it misses the point.
It can,
yes. It can. But if somebody's really able to, that's their channel. That's how they tune in. And in a sense, I would say the same almost becomes true in my world of psychotherapy, that if you're just trying to, there's some good that could come about by just talking to anybody, if that helps. But sometimes what it does is it keeps somebody trapped.
Yes.
Because they're not wanting to see a deeper picture of what's really going on and just trying to not just solve the problem, but get to what's causation of the problem so the problem doesn't arise again in a different form.
Yes.
So Jyotishi, I'm sorry.
Jyotisha.
Jyotisha. Okay, excuse me.
You can just call it Jyotish.
Okay, I'll just call it Jyotish because that's all I remember. If it's in a practitioner who doesn't really know what they're doing and not able to really tune in and just so lost in the details, because there's it's so much more complex than Western astrology.
Yes, it is.
And it's, as you say, richer time. It's been around for thousands of years, thousands. And it's been developed and expounded upon by them. But it's really looking at a much bigger picture.
Yes.
And the practitioner, as well as allowing yourself to sort of say, I want to see that bigger picture. I also, as somebody who's getting my Jyotish read, I'm wanting to see something larger. I'm wanting to see a bigger pattern. But as we're going to get into in a few minutes, what do we do with that bigger pattern is really the question, right? It's not just what's that pattern, but what am I willing to create from that?
And what am I? What is it possible for me to create from that? Because, so yes. So it's first on the point of the practitioner, you know, as they like to say, not every doctor graduated at the top of their medical class, and this is true in all fields of endeavor. This is nicely embedded into notions about Jyotisha, in that the word for intuition in Sanskrit is Ishtabala, which means the strength of the deity. So Jyotisha is regarded as a sadhana or a spiritual path in its own right, and it has many requirements for a practitioner to excel in it, certain kinds of behavior, certain kinds of dietary requirements, and most of all, that one have some very strong relationship with divinity, because one does not want to rely on one's own petty ego structure and its fallacies to guide other people. One is hoping that to connect to a larger, more intelligent force, and then embody that force enough to express it to another human being.
That sounds a lot like therapy, in a sense. Forget about the divinity part. We could just say that's consciousness or something larger than ourselves.
Correct.
To translate it into psychotherapy. But in a sense, you know, I don't know. I just love how you express yourself. You have a beautiful way of saying this. And it's like, so anyway, sorry to interrupt. You're going on.
So, yes, and perhaps, you know, because humans are fundamentally emotional, although there is one universal field of consciousness that we could refer to as the supreme reality, in Vedic spirituality, there, unless you're a practitioner of Vedanta or Buddhism, and even then in Tibetan Buddhism, most people prefer to worship a personal form of God, because human beings tend to bond more strongly or associate more strongly with something that has name, form, and attribute. And most people cannot really focus for an extended period of time on nothingness, because it's nothing, it's blank, and we're something. And so the idea is that deities act as a bridge for humans between themselves and the universal and the supreme reality. So we could invent, you know, a deity of psychotherapy. but
in a sense, we are, because we're saying there's a larger structure, a larger way to connect. And what are you doing with, again, what are we going to, in the second part of this, talk about that point of connection? What do we do with that connection? Right? And let's say you don't even believe in God. It's not a belief. It's still that point of connection to something more than we are.
Right.
So even if you're agnostic, how do you come to connect to something greater than yourself?
Yes.
And then you call it what you will.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
And whether or not there is a God, the Buddha himself is supposed to have said, there are things that are useful and things that are true, and the things that are useful are more important.
Yes.
And so there is, it tends to be troubling for humans to feel that everything rests upon themselves alone in some way. That doesn't tend to be the most sort of inspiring version of reality, unless you are an extremely confident human being.
Well, again, and then the problem becomes, if you're narcissistic.
Yeah, right. You've gone over the bar with confidence.
That's right. And you could easily get lost in a different direction. So it's, again, finding that balance for yourself.
So Jyotisha, too, as a system of astrology, employs regularly what is called upaya, or remedial method, with the understanding that people will want to bend their fate. And so a huge part of Jyotisha is upaya. And so there is, yes, because the question is, if you take any one individual and you help them understand who they are in relation to a greater reality, that alone can be very helpful, particularly because people may be embedded in expectations that have never worked for them.
So
it can be very freeing to understand that no amount of heroic effort will lift you out of poverty. The best you can hope for is to paint your cardboard box. because for some people that is going to prove to be true.
Well, no matter how much I want to save my relationship or my partner, if they don't want to be saved, sorry to translate it back to therapy again.
Right. You know, then it may not.
That's right. And so, again, surrendering, which we're going to talk about in a second. So, by the way, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial today on Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry, and apparently that's who I am. We're with Allison today talking about Jyotish and the relationship to psychotherapy and a whole lot of other fun topics. By the way, it's so great to have you here once again.
It's very fun to be here.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, and if they think, you know, maybe they just have a question, is that okay for them to contact you to even ask a question?
Yes, it is.
How would they get a hold of you?
The best way to contact me is via email.
Oh, okay. What's your email?
PremaVratini@yahoo.com.
Okay. That's a mouthful. Spell that out for people.
P as in pumpkin, R as in radar, E as in elephant, M as in mother, A as in apple, V as in victory, R as in radar, A as in apple, T as in Tom, I as in India, N as in Nancy, and I as in India, @yahoo.com.
Wow, that is a mouthful. You've done this before, have you not?
Yes, I made this email address way back when the web started. When Yahoo was young. And I have had opportunities to regret that I didn't go with joe@yahoo.com.
You're right. Joe would have been more interesting. Okay, so one of the things I want to get to is the sense of, and again, we could go on for hours and hours, and I really do hope you come back. I really want to have a much longer conversation. But one of the things I really want to get to, and I'm sure we'll even talk about this again in the future, is that second part. Okay, so your Jyotish says you're in a bad cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're in a good cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, what my concern in therapy is, it's like things, you don't come when the house is on fire, which is when most people come to therapy and go, why can't you put down my burning house and save me at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, why'd the house burn down? Because it was burning before you ever came to me? And so it's sort of like, what do we do with our experience when something's bad or something's even good? What do we create from that? And just because the cycle says you're in a bad cycle or you're in a good cycle, what do we create from that?
That again is going, according to me, to be individual. Because first of all, there is, you know, as the Jyotishi or the observer, the attempted an analyzer of the greater reality, the question is, what is possible for the person to create? Is this a time and a place and a being who can generate some meaningful effort to modify what they are undergoing, or is surrender going to be a better strategy? And so one of the ways, Indian astrology looks at that is through the medium of karma, which is multi-layered, multi-causal, and has various degrees of fixity. So if something is what we refer to as drudha, very fixed karma, it will be very, very difficult for the being to modify it in any fashion that produces a noticeable result. If it's drada adrada, fixed unfixed, then the being may, with great effort, be able to modify, get a modified outcome. And if it is purely adrada, then the being may really have what they subjectively experience as a lot of choice about how to proceed. So this will vary both individual to individual based on personal psychology. Some people are very much... I do it and I get a result. This is, of course, based on usually on the experience of doing it and getting a result.
Okay.
And and other beings will have the experience of no matter what I do, things go awry. And this, again, will be based on their experience.
You still need to do something. In that case, what you're saying is you surrender. So, for example, let me translate this again. And I'm sorry to be so ignorant of how to say this appropriately. But in it's just so fun to compare it to a psychotherapeutic process in a sense, because somebody's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go run a marathon.
Correct.
So what you do is you surrender to being in a wheelchair and stop fighting it. I say to everybody, we're all in a wheelchair. Every
Correct.
Single one of us, and we don't know it.
Exactly.
And sometimes we're afraid of the label. Oh, I'm depressed. I'm ADHD. I'm this. I'm that. And it's just like, stop fighting the wheelchair. It's okay to accept that. The question isn't what's the wheelchair. The question is, what am I going to create from this?
Yes, and then you enter the realm of samskara, of if there isn't something external, there can be things externally to do.
Maybe.
And there can be many useful external upayas if the person has the resources, the wherewithal, and the karmic potential to carry them out. For instance, if you have $1 million and you live in a very bad vastu house, you can very easily change your space. Space has a big influence on the kind of time you experience.
Okay.
If you have a reasonable desire to change inside and you understand that part of the reason you're ADD is because you have what in Ayurveda would be termed vata derangement, you may be able to undergo some panchakarma and change what you eat, and in addition to taking or not Western medications. So depending on the person and the problem, external things may be very useful. But let's say you do have a person who is in a wheelchair and is never going to get out and hates it. Then you are left strictly with working with modifying the internal mental impression so that the person has a better relationship to the reality they find themselves in that is not changeable or fixable.
So I'm in a bad cycle, and instead of fighting it, you surrender to it and then create something, a different internal environment, that I'm going to stop fighting the demons inside me.
Yes.
And come to peace with it so I could create something greater from that experience.
Yes.
Again, most people who go to prison end up in hell. Some people come out enlightened. Some people walk out as Nelson Mandela, and I'm going to change the world.
Yes.
Instead of walking out angry. If I had went through what Nelson Mandela did, I'd be the angriest person in the world. Instead, he created power from that.
Yes.
And so in a sense, you're in something bad, it's still, there's always something you could do if that's external, like we said, the house or the ADHD example. I would
add, there isn't always something you can do, because, and again, this is where the sort of fascinating paradoxes of Indian philosophy enter in, because in order for there to be something for you to do, you're going to need a hetu, what is called in Indian philosophy a hetu, a concomitant cause. Because if God or fate chooses to completely cut you off from any kind of assistance, even if you want to change your internal reality and you don't know, you're going to need a book, you're going to need a person, you're going to need a teaching. If you don't have these things, then things are not going to change for that individual. You
until
understand what
they allow that. But
no,
again,
not until they allow it, until something allows it. You can picture many of these situations. If you are, if you're a Thai girl born in a poor family in Thailand and you're sold into prostitution at the age of 6 and you have to participate in that and you're kept in a cage, the statement that this person in that circumstance can do anything for themselves
is ridiculous.
It will depend on only their inner resources, which will be determined by their prior past lives. So it's not it's not available to every being at all times to make use of a tool. Now, of course.
But that doesn't mean you can't learn to somehow transcend your experience.
Some people, some of the time.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I am not a fan, you know, and it's my observation that, that people, you know, but even effort is sort of a previously decided thing, because again, there's so many factors that go into how much effort people make. But you know, it could be an observation that many people are given tools that they do not then make use of because.
So it's not just fighting windmills that aren't there that you can't, right? Sometimes there is nothing. Sometimes there, as you said, there's like three different choices. Sometimes there's a lot you could do. Sometimes there's a little you can do to modify. Sometimes there's absolutely nothing. Again, your Thai girl example, you know, and some of us are born without the legs to run. We're never going to run, or we're in this terrible cage.
Right. But there are many times, I think your point is something about learned helplessness, which
yes,
is that
exactly
that you, as a fiery, inspiring guy, want to help people rise above learned helplessness. So that also can, you know, even the understanding of a concept such as learned helplessness to someone who has learned helplessness can be useful in terms of helping them go beyond it. But again, there's this is why, you know, ultimately in Indian philosophy, we say there's no such thing as free will. There's only the appearance of free will, because it is always going to go back to, you know, this sort of churning factors that drive situations for people.
Yeah. Which is something you were telling me individually as well.
Yes.
Because I'm a fighter. That's my job.
Yes, that is your job, your dharma.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that I can't take that fire inside me, that burning desire to do something to make a difference in the world. And I can't, at least, maybe I can't do it for me. Maybe I can't change it for me, but maybe I can be an inspiration or help somebody else to make a difference for themselves. And in a sense, that's still an action. That's still a defiance. That's still a way to regain power and control for myself from what's going on.
Yes. Yes. And that's, you know, that's part of the beauty of the human heart well expressed, is that desire that, you know, even if I may not improve myself, I can improve something for someone else.
Yeah. And by doing so, again, the notion of volunteerism, I could then do it for myself. The girl that was born into poverty and sexual slavery or some terrible thing, she might be trapped. Her karma might be terrible. Her past life, however you want to say that, you know, if you believe in that or not, she's still mentally trapped in the experience that she went through.
Yes.
And I see that all the time with people who have been abused. And they still are trapped in that previous traumas that they went through. We've all had trauma, by the way.
Yes, everybody suffers.
Everybody suffers. And the question is, still, in the end, what am I doing with that suffering?
Yes, the question is, in the end, unless you're dead, what are you doing with that suffering? You know, if you're in a position to be asked that question or ask that question yourself. And that is, you know, it's an interesting age we live in, because again, in the terms of great cosmological time cycles, we live in the long age of Kali Yuga, which is the age of strife, chaos, confusion, and dissolution. So trauma has become, human beings as far back as we know have always traumatized each other, but the scale and the depth of human cruelty to other humans and other beings in all categories is really staggering these days, you know, and we often point to the Holocaust as a major example of that. The Germans, in fact, have a...
Yeah, so thank you. I know we're like coming to the end here.
Okay.
So anyways, thank you. I think we get that point. And thank you so much, Allison. Please come back.
I will.
And still... I still am going to fight and say to everyone, fight, create your power, surrender to what you need to, and fight what you can.
Exactly. The serenity prayer.
Serenity prayer. Thank you. And bye, everyone.